In the small town of Garnet, Texas, where secrets run as deep as the scorching summer heat, Julia Heberlin's We Are All the Same in the Dark unfolds like a fever dream. This haunting psychological thriller has captivated readers worldwide since its publication, earning Heberlin comparisons to Gillian Flynn and Tana French for her ability to weave atmospheric suspense with profound character studies. The novel spent weeks on bestseller lists across Europe and received glowing praise from Stephen King, who called it a gem of a novel, suspenseful, twisty, and beautifully written. What makes this story particularly compelling is how it explores the ripple effects of trauma, how one person's disappearance can haunt an entire community for generations, creating shadows that never quite fade from the landscape. The novel opens with an unforgettable scene. A man driving along a desolate Texas highway spots what he initially mistakes for an injured dog in a field of dandelions. Following what he believes is divine guidance, he stops his truck and approaches cautiously. What he discovers is a young girl, barely conscious in the blistering heat, wearing a white dress and a sequined scarf covering one eye. When he removes the scarf, he finds she's missing an eye, and her scream is carried away by the wind as an 18-wheeler thunders past. This man is Wyatt Branson, a figure shrouded in the town's darkest mystery. 10 years earlier, his beautiful sister Trumanel vanished without a trace, and their abusive father disappeared the same night. Though never charged, Wyatt has lived under a cloud of suspicion ever since. The discovery of this one-eyed girl, whom he calls Angel, becomes a pivotal moment that will eventually unravel decades of carefully buried secrets. Wyatt's decision to help the girl rather than walk away reveals his complex character. Despite his instinct for self-preservation, he carries her to his truck, even as she blows a dandelion wish that he interprets as some kind of warning or communication with a higher power. This moment establishes one of the novel's central motifs: dandelions as symbols of both fragility and resilience, wishes and warnings. When Wyatt brings Angel home, we glimpse the psychological prison he inhabits. He speaks as though his sister Trumanel is still alive, waiting on the porch like a protective shadow. The house itself is a monument to trauma, containing chilling remnants of their childhood terror, including a portrait of Leela, a cousin who supposedly hanged herself, which their father used in annual Christmas Eve rituals involving red ribbons and threats. Enter Odette Tucker, a local police officer with her own connection to the Branson tragedy. Odette lost her leg in an accident the very night Trumanel disappeared, a coincidence that feels increasingly significant as the story unfolds. When she receives an anonymous tip that Wyatt Branson has a girl out there, she approaches the freshly painted white Branson house with trepidation, noting how Wyatt repaints it every June 7th, the anniversary of Trumanel's disappearance, always using Chantilly lace paint that he claims Trumanel selects. Odette's history with Wyatt runs deep. At 16, she was romantically involved with him, and on the night Trumanel disappeared, they had planned to meet. Instead, Wyatt warned her to run when she arrived, and later that night, her truck flipped in a ditch, crushing her leg. Meanwhile, Wyatt was found wandering by a lake, speaking gibberish. Though many believe Wyatt killed Trumanel and Frank Branson, there was never enough evidence. When Odette discovers the silent, one-eyed girl at Wyatt's home, she makes a crucial decision not to report finding her, knowing it would destroy Wyatt and potentially harm the girl. Instead, she takes Angel to her cousin Maggie's safe house, giving the girl 48 hours to decide whether to trust her. This decision marks the beginning of Odette's personal investigation that will ultimately lead her into grave danger. The parallel between Angel and Odette, one missing an eye, one missing a leg, creates a powerful bond between them. "You with one eye, me with one leg," Odette tells Angel, suggesting their shared physical differences make them uniquely suited to understand each other's trauma. This connection becomes the emotional core of the novel's first half, as Odette's protective instincts toward Angel mirror her lingering loyalty to Wyatt. As Odette investigates Angel's appearance and possible connection to Trumanel's disappearance, she uncovers disturbing clues. In the field where Wyatt found Angel, she discovers a circle of dying dandelions arranged like tiny dead dolls. Later, she receives a shovel with 70x7 painted in red on the aluminum blade, a biblical reference to forgiveness that takes on sinister implications. The investigation forces Odette to confront her own family secrets. In her late father's locked desk drawer, she finds vodka, a Santa box of mementos, including baptism photos taken after each time he killed someone in the line of duty, and what appears to be dried dandelions hidden in a baggie. She begins to question her father's role in the events of that fateful night, wondering if he passed her bleeding in a ditch while responding to the Branson house call, where he found blood but no bodies. Meanwhile, Angel breaks her silence with a single word, dandelion, when asked what personal details she'd like painted on her new prosthetic eye. This moment connects her to the field where she was found and to the mysterious contents of Odette's father's hidden baggie, suggesting deeper connections than initially apparent. The prosthetic eye transforms Angel completely, giving her not just two identical deep green eyes with flecks of sun, but a disguise that might protect her from whoever is hunting her. As Tushar, the ocularist, explains, "It's not a miracle, but a beautiful illusion." This transformation symbolizes how appearances can deceive, a theme that runs throughout the novel as characters hide their true natures behind carefully constructed facades. As Odette's investigation deepens, so do her personal conflicts. Her marriage to Finn, a Chicago lawyer who came to town to make a documentary about the Trumanel case, is falling apart. Their relationship began under questionable circumstances. Was he attracted to her connection to the Trumanel case rather than to her? When Finn discovers Odette's continued involvement with Wyatt, he leaves her, taking plates, cups, and a hammer, and delivering a painful parting shot. "When it comes to your feelings for him, I shouldn't mistake grief for love, guilt for passion." The novel excels at exploring how trauma shapes relationships. Odette's grandmother warned her to stay away from that boy, whom she'd nicknamed Lion's Eye, yet Odette remained drawn to Wyatt despite, or perhaps because of, his dangerous reputation. Similarly, her cousin Maggie provides unwavering support while simultaneously warning Odette that she's not responsible for Trumanel or Wyatt. "I can't be your mountain anymore." These complex relationships reflect how trauma creates both connection and division. Characters who have experienced similar pain understand each other in ways others cannot. Yet their shared history also creates barriers of guilt, resentment, and unspoken truths. One night, after receiving a disturbing phone call with sobbing and the word Trumanel, Odette makes a crucial discovery. Her father's rattlesnake boots that he claimed were destroyed the night Trumanel disappeared. The boots are caked with mud and what appears to be bloodstains, forcing her to confront the possibility of her father's involvement in Trumanel's disappearance. This discovery leads her to dig at a specific spot on Branson land, a fence post with an extra piece of wood making a cross. As she digs alone in the dark, her shovel strikes something, and a gun cocks behind her. The narrative takes a dramatic shift forward 5 years, now following Angel, the once traumatized young girl who has transformed herself into a determined young woman of 18. Now going by Angelica Odette Dunn, having taken her savior's name as her middle name, she returns to the town that holds so many dark memories. The mystery of what befell Odette during those intervening years hangs heavy over the story, driving Angel's relentless pursuit of truth. At an emotional memorial service for Odette, Angel stands among a crowd of 500 mourners who've gathered for the unveiling of a controversial memorial statue. The artwork, a haunting winged figure with an intentionally blank face, serves as a dual tribute to both Trumanel and Odette, linking their fates in perpetuity. The statue's ambiguous design sparks heated debates among townspeople about its appropriateness. Below it, a simple yet powerful inscription reads, "We will wait forever," words that echo the community's unresolved grief. Standing before it, Angel makes a silent but fierce vow, "I'm coming after you, you son of a bitch." Angel's investigation leads her to Odette's abandoned blue house, which stands as a time capsule of the detective's life. In the closet, she discovers an eerily organized row of Odette's prosthetic legs, four different ones, each telling its own story of adaptation and resilience. But the most striking discovery is a Betty Crocker cookbook that Odette transformed into an extensive crime scene archive. Its pages reveal a methodical investigation, bloody handprint photos from Trumanel's front door, evidence bags containing glitter-speckled hair from the bathtub drain, detailed police reports, precise GPS coordinates of search areas, meticulous drawings of crime scenes, and deeply personal diary entries chronicling Odette's growing obsession with the case. The town itself has become a landscape of unhealed wounds, with both Trumanel's and Odette's disappearances casting long shadows over daily life. Through Angel's determined investigation, we reconnect with characters whose lives remain forever altered. Finn, once the promising young cop, now struggles with alcoholism and guilt, unable to move past his failure to solve either case. Rusty, Odette's former partner, channels his grief into an almost manic pursuit of justice, his police office walls covered in case files and theories. Most haunting is Wyatt, who maintains his peculiar ritual of repainting his white house every year, a compulsive act that seems to speak to deeper, unspoken horrors. Each character Angel encounters reveals new layers of the mystery while demonstrating how trauma can reshape entire communities. As Angel delves deeper into the investigation, she confronts her own haunting past through a series of painful revelations. The trauma that shaped her life occurred when she was just 10 years old. Her father shot her in the eye, a violent response triggered by her mother slapping him for snapping her bikini top at a family gathering. The scene unfolds with devastating clarity as Angel recalls hiding beneath their sun-bleached trailer, the metal burning against her skin, watching helplessly as police officers eventually wrapped her mother's body in black plastic. In the long minute after shooting me, while my father considered firing again, I knew he would always be watching me, she recalls, the memory etched permanently in her mind like a scar that never fully heals. This devastating revelation illuminates multiple aspects of Angel's character and motivations. Her prolonged silence when Odette initially found her wasn't merely shock. Trauma had literally stolen her voice, leaving her mute for months afterward. The experience explains her fierce determination to find justice for Odette, who not only provided her with a prosthetic eye, but offered something far more precious, a metaphorical second chance at life. Their connection runs deeper than mere doctor and patient. They are bound by shared experiences of violence and survival. Angel's relentless pursuit of truth leads her back to the Blue House, a place that holds both answers and danger. During a terrifying confrontation, an intruder attacks her in the darkened hallway. In a moment of desperate ingenuity, she grabs one of Odette's prosthetic legs and uses it as an improvised weapon, defending herself with the very tool that helped heal another victim. The attack reveals something crucial. Her assailant isn't any of the usual suspects, not her father, not Finn, Rusty, or Wyatt, but rather an older man wearing a cross, a detail that becomes devastatingly significant. The novel's climactic final section unravels a web of family secrets and long-buried guilt. Reverend Tucker, Odette's uncle and Maggie's father, emerges as the unexpected killer, having accidentally shot Trumanel Branson during a heated confrontation. The truth spills out in layers. Tucker had gone to the Branson home armed with a gun, driven by rage after his wife finally confessed a 14-year-old secret. When Odette unexpectedly arrived at the scene, Wyatt made the crucial decision to send her away, protecting her from what was about to unfold. In the chaos that followed, Wyatt's attempt to disarm Tucker resulted in a wild shot that struck Trumanel, who stumbled outside before succumbing to her wounds. The tragedy deepened when Odette's father, the Reverend's own brother, arrived to clean up the situation, dragging Frank Branson into a field and executing him. Years later, when his daughter Odette lost her leg in an accident, he interpreted it as divine retribution,
God's punishment for his role in covering up the deaths. This revelation transforms our understanding of not just the crime, but the web of guilt, protection, and misguided redemption that has haunted three families for generations. The novel's resolution offers not just answers, but a profound meditation on healing and transformation. Angel, now thriving as a college student, reflects deeply on how each character sought refuge in their own particular darkness. Rusty behind sunglasses, Odette writing under covers, Trumanelle whispering in moonlit fields, my imprisoned father, Wyatt with his ghost, the Reverend's final moments, and dandelions that carpet graves, enable wishes, and prove resurrection is possible. Each character's method of hiding, whether physical, emotional, or spiritual, represents different ways humans cope with unbearable truth. This introspection reveals how trauma creates patterns of concealment that ripple through generations. Rusty sunglasses shield more than his eyes. They mask years of guilt and complicity. Odette's nighttime writing becomes both escape and confession, while Trumanelle's moonlit whispers echo the voices of countless victims whose stories went unheard. The imagery of darkness and light weaves throughout their interconnected stories, suggesting that healing begins when shadows are finally illuminated. The dandelions, which have appeared throughout the novel as symbols of both fragility and resilience, take on their fullest meaning in these final pages. Their presence in graveyards speaks to life's persistence in death's domain. The transformation from bright yellow flower to ethereal seed head mirrors the characters' journeys from solid certainties to more delicate but far-reaching truths. Most significantly, the dandelion's ability to regenerate from even the smallest root fragment becomes a powerful metaphor for human resilience, suggesting that even when nearly everything is lost, the essential spark of life remains. Through Angel's evolution, we witness this resilience in action. The loss of her eye becomes more than a physical wound. It represents a new way of seeing the world, one that values truth over surface appearances. Despite losing her mother, her innocence, and nearly her life, she has forged a new identity and future for herself. Her journey from victim to survivor to scholar embodies the dandelion's transformation from flower to seed to new growth. The town itself faces a parallel journey of healing. Long-buried secrets, once exposed, force a collective reckoning. This healing process, while more painful than maintaining comfortable lies, offers the only path toward authentic community renewal. Like the dandelion's deep taproot, truth must penetrate beneath surface appearances to enable genuine transformation. The novel suggests that only by acknowledging our darkest chapters can we begin writing new ones, both individually and collectively. Throughout the novel, the Texas landscape functions almost as another character, vast, unforgiving, yet strangely beautiful. The scorching heat that nearly killed Angel in the opening scene creates a visceral reminder of nature's indifference, while the endless horizon line suggests both possibility and emptiness. The tornado that forces Angel and Wyatt to take shelter together years later serves as nature's catalyst for their reconnection, its violent energy mirroring their own turbulent emotions. The lake where bodies might be hidden becomes a dark mirror of the community's secrets, its placid surface concealing depths of unspoken truths. This setting creates a powerful sense of isolation, with characters often alone on empty roads or in fields where no one can hear them scream. The vast stretches of farmland, punctuated only by abandoned gas stations and weathered fence posts, emphasize the characters' psychological solitude. Yet these same spaces also offer moments of unexpected beauty and connection, like the spectacular sunset Angel and Wyatt witness after the storm passes, painting the sky in fierce oranges and purples that seem to promise renewal. The dandelions that carpet graves prove resurrection is possible, their persistent yellow heads pushing through concrete and clay to bloom in unlikely places. The novel's exploration of disability adds profound depth to its themes of resilience and adaptation. Both Odette and Angel navigate the world with physical differences that make them simultaneously vulnerable and strong. Odette's collection of prosthetic legs, from the practical everyday model to her dancing leg, represents different facets of her identity and her refusal to be defined by loss. Angel's artificial eye becomes both a shield and a window, allowing her to control what others see while reminding her of her own survival. Their adaptations become powerful metaphors for the ways we all construct new identities after trauma, piecing together new versions of ourselves from what remains. As Tashar tells Angel about her prosthetic eye, it's not a miracle, but a beautiful illusion, suggesting that healing itself might be a kind of beautiful illusion we create to move forward. This insight reverberates throughout the novel, suggesting that perhaps all recovery requires a degree of artistic reconstruction, a willingness to see beauty in what's broken and to fashion something new from the fragments of the past. The landscape itself embodies this paradox, its harsh realities existing alongside moments of transcendent beauty, much like the character's own journeys through loss toward redemption. We Are All the Same in the Dark ultimately explores how silence, whether chosen or forced, can both protect and destroy. Angel's mutism initially serves as a shield, protecting her from having to confront and reveal dangerous truths about her past trauma. This self-imposed silence becomes both a survival mechanism and a prison, reflecting how trauma victims often retreat into themselves as a form of self-preservation. Yet eventually, her decision to speak becomes not just an act of courage, but a necessary step toward healing and reclaiming her identity. Similarly, the town's collective silence about its suspicions regarding Wyatt allowed injustice to fester for years, demonstrating how communal silence can perpetuate cycles of violence and protect the wrong people. The novel delves deep into the complicated relationship between truth and safety. While speaking truth can be dangerous, as evidenced when Wyatt's mother's confession to his father triggered a catastrophic bout of violence, the narrative suggests it's ultimately the only path to genuine healing and reconciliation. The recurring biblical reference 70x7, forgive not 7 times but 70 times 7, takes on layered meaning by the novel's end, suggesting that true forgiveness might be possible only after truth has been fully acknowledged and processed. This spiritual dimension adds depth to the story's exploration of healing and redemption. Throughout the narrative, silence manifests in various forms, as protection, as weapon, as burden, and finally as something that must be broken for healing to begin. The town itself becomes a character in this dynamic, its conspiracy of silence around disappeared women revealing how communities can become complicit in perpetuating trauma through their refusal to acknowledge uncomfortable truths. In its final pages, the novel offers no easy resolution, but rather a nuanced understanding of how healing actually works. Angel, now in college with a roommate who doesn't know about her prosthetic eye, contemplates whether we're all both broken and whole. This duality, that we can be simultaneously damaged and complete, offers perhaps the novel's most profound insight into the nature of trauma and recovery. It suggests that healing isn't about returning to some pristine pre-trauma state, but rather about integrating our wounds into a new whole. Like the dandelions that appear throughout its pages, fragile yet persistent, both weeds and wishes, the characters in We Are All the Same in the Dark find ways to grow in the harshest conditions. These flowers become a powerful metaphor for resilience, representing how something deemed unwanted can still possess beauty and strength. The characters transform their pain into something that, if not conventionally beautiful, is at least alive and reaching toward the light, much like the dandelions that push through cracks in the concrete, defying all odds to bloom.